In the 1980s and 1990s, the opening of a new shopping mall was a big deal in Kansas City. Bannister Mall, Crown Center, Metro North, Mission Center, these places were all the rage in their own day. As shopping mall after shopping mall is scheduled for demolition and we prepare to hear ideas for repurposing Metcalf South, we can't help but wonder if the indoor mall is becoming a thing of the past. I'm Gina Kaufman. On the next Central Standard, we'll look at the role of the shopping mall in its heyday, plus the legacy of these abandoned structures in our current cityscape. We'll want to hear your shopping mall memories, too. That's coming right up after this news. Indoor shopping malls in Kansas City and across the nation have been losing business and shutting their doors for years. But with the recent closure of Metro North and tomorrow's community meeting to discuss the future of Metcalf South, the fate of this staple of American culture is really on our minds. I'm Gina Kaufman, and here with me today to look at the storied life of the shopping mall are three wonderful guests. First, I'd like to introduce urban planning guru Michael Frisch. He comes to us from UMKC's Department of Architecture, Urban Planning, and Design. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
So could you give us a little history of the rise of the shopping mall in the American city? What preceded shopping malls and what cultural or economic factors led to their creation and popularity?
So in Kansas City, we have the Plaza, which is really one of the earliest organized kind of shopping village. And from, again, the Plaza, it's from the 1920s. But between the 1920s and the 1950s, shopping kind of villages began to morph into malls. And so starting about 1955, we see the rise of a shopping mall.
Why did that happen?
It's very much auto-based. It's a way of consumers more and more were driving to the mall instead of taking the streetcar downtown to shop. And so it was a way of organizing shopping in a particular location with convenient parking and a easier way, you know, at the same time, it's the rise of the chain store. And so real estate developers were finding a product to sell to franchises of these chain stores.
Was it all about shopping, or was there some other crucial activity that was, or function that the shopping mall was performing?
So, and I guess those of you who are baby boomers or Gen X, you know that there was this privatized public space in the mall, and that as teenagers, malls became kind of the place to hang out. And very much, though, that's from the mid-60s all the way into the 90s.
Do you think it matters what happens to these malls or the physical structure that structures that house them now in 2014?
Well, I think empty malls are a real blight on a community. I mean, they're an eyesore. Again, it's privatized public space. It's all privately owned. Generally, if you think of if you look at an aerial map of a mall, 2/3 of the size of that parcel of land is surface parking. So you have an enormous area of impervious surface. There are runoff issues. It's kind of blighted. I mean, to me, it fits the definition of blight.
Well, we'll get back to Michael Frisch's insights from an urban planning and design perspective, but also here with us is the Kansas City Star's Lewis Duguid. He recently wrote an article examining how urban sprawl has affected area shopping malls. Hi, Lewis. How are you this morning?
I'm happy to be here, Gina. How are you?
Pretty good. So summarize for us the premise of your article.
Well, I think that Michael's right. The malls have developed as downtowns have faded. And you have to look at this in the context of World War II. The veterans were returning. The GI Bill enabled many veterans to be able to buy homes. Cities were expanding into the suburbs. And once the new housing was sited, then businesses decided, well, by golly, let's go out there where the people are and put in malls. And that's what we have in the Kansas City area. As the population continued its outward migration, then malls developed to give people convenience in shopping.
It sounds like your idea is kind of that the viability of downtown Kansas City is kind of doing this little dance with the role of the shopping mall and the success of the shopping mall. Can you have both a viable downtown and really thriving shopping malls in the suburbs?
That's the trick question, and I think that's what cities are really trying to grapple with today. And downtowns have had to remake themselves, ours being one of them. The malls really are creation of downtowns being the places where your mom and dad did their shopping. And we, as the newer generation, have moved into the suburbs, and so we're going to be shopping in a place that's new and that fits us.
Michael, you want to jump in here?
I just want to point out that in greater Kansas City, it isn't just the competition with downtown, that the malls are now competing with these brand new downtown equivalents that I'd call power centers or lifestyle centers. And we built three enormous new retail areas, Zona Rosa, Village West, and then the combination of shops in and around Metcalf and at 135th. And that's in the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah, we definitely will be getting to that in more detail later in the show. Something that, Lewis, you also wrote about in that article is the relationship between the shopping mall and the big box store.
Right. Many of the big box stores had already had long-standing existence downtown, Macy's and Jones being among them. And when the shopping malls were being constructed by developers out in the suburbs, then the big box stores were approached, hey, can you come and be a part of this? And so they became the anchor stores. And they became the places that really drove a lot of traffic, and then other stores were sited around in those areas, so that they began to feed off of the customer traffic and get the disposable dollars that people had.
Do you think it matters what happens to the shopping mall?
Oh, absolutely. As Michael said, when the shopping malls die, they take a huge part of the community with them. And we saw that inside Kansas City with the Landing going the way that it did. It's still there, but it's far from what it used to be. And then, of course, with Bannister Mall, Benjamin Plaza, as those have died, first living and killing off some of the other shopping centers, Truman Corners being one of them. But then as they've died, because other places have been sited in Lee's Summit and Independence and Blue Springs, then that causes a blight to occur in the South Kansas City area.
What do you think the trends you've just outlined say about us as a city?
A city is a growing, changing, fascinating organism, and it shows that nothing is certain, nothing is long-term. When I first came to Kansas City in 1977, the Antioch Shopping Center was a place to go to buy things, and I did. But the Antioch Shopping Center had gone through several metamorphoses. It was an open-air shopping center, kind of like the Country Club Plaza. Then they put a roof on it to try to make it like the covered malls. And then it changed again. And then now it's changing yet again because the traffic and new trends and malls have occurred, and new generations are seeing more opportunities elsewhere.
We'll hold that thought, because before we go any further, I need to let our listeners know that you are listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we've met urban planner Michael Frisch and Kansas City Star columnist Lewis Duguid. Now let's say hello to Steve Vakrat, who joins us from The Pitch. In last week's Pitch, Steve wrote a tour of sorts featuring abandoned or nearly abandoned structures that serve as reminders of Kansas City's discarded dreams. Steve, most of the places you write about are located in the suburbs, and a lot of them are shopping malls.
Correct. So the point of doing that story, because the week before we had written about all the things that are coming out of the ground and all the possibilities with development in Kansas City. But we also felt like we needed to look at the flip side of that, which is places that were promised to be big developments or things that were going to be new gleaming structures in town that never quite came to pass, as well as things that have just lingered as eyesores. And you're right, a lot of those are some of the old shopping malls that have been abandoned. Indian Springs Mall, Metcalf South. Bannister didn't make that list because, of course, now Cerner is redeveloping that into a massive project. But you just look at what Bannister did to the area around it for years before anybody could really put together the financing and the gumption to get it started again.
What did it do, in case some of our listeners aren't familiar with that story?
Well, it's part and parcel to what happens with a lot of these dead shopping malls, is that it becomes a blight and it tends to attract some level of crime, and that festers into the neighborhoods around it. Nobody wants to live, well, almost nobody wants to live as a first option near a dead mall. They tend to be ugly. It's kind of depressing to look at too. Empty parking lots, and it really reduces the value of the properties around them. And since they tend to be, as we've discussed, in suburban locations, there tend to be neighborhoods nearby, and it can be a real drag on the neighborhoods.
For each place you write about, you address commercial real estate as an important part of the story, which makes sense. But how do trends in commercial real estate factor into the shopping center story here in Kansas City?
Well, as we touched on a little bit, the trends follow what consumers like. And, you know, over the year, you know, because of the automobile and post-World War II realities, the enclosed shopping mall was an attractive option for a long time. But, you know, as you get more of those, people's tastes start to change. And when you think about it, some of those old malls, particularly the dead ones, are almost, nowadays, they almost seem intimidating in a way, because they're not great architectural pieces of beauty, by and large. They're huge surface lots, and they kind of tend to be like, inside they tend to be sort of dark, and they can be gloomy if they're not built very well. And so people have gravitated towards, you know, these power centers like Zona Rosa, which are sort of these outdoor areas. And they tend to have parking garages too, and so you don't have as quite a intense layout of surface parking. And they're just a lot more inviting. And, you know, part of what's done in some of these older malls too is the business fortunes of the companies that populated them. Indian Springs Mall in Kansas City, Kansas, for instance, one of their anchor stores was Montgomery Ward. And their business model had faded for several years before they finally went away, I believe in the early 2000s. And, you know, part of the cornerstone for these malls is these big anchor stores like Montgomery Ward. And when one goes, it's really difficult to find a new tenant to fill them up. And it really hurts the balance sheet for those malls to be able to survive.
Michael Frisch, does this essentially follow the same trend we're seeing in other mid-sized Midwestern cities right now? Or are there some particularities worth noting about Kansas City?
Kansas City is not exceptional in this matter. All over the country, you're going to find dead malls in and around even some of the largest cities.
That something that kind of caught my interest is the idea that the abandoned mall has become this intimidating structure. And when you think about the intimidation, that's exactly what it sounds like caused people to stop doing their shopping in downtowns. So are we seeing, can what we have done to revitalize downtown inform the project of revitalizing these abandoned malls?
So to some degree, retail requires rooftops and requires households who have money to spend. To the degree that I think communities have been giving away too many incentives. We zone too much land for commercial. We've been encouraging this sprawl through
explain
our
that.
Public policies.
Yeah, explain
so
that a little.
It gets down to the amount of land we zone commercial. And that's under a comprehensive plan for every one of our communities. And communities zone land for commercial because they want the property tax and the sales tax that comes from commercial. But if you don't, you know, if the commercial's not there, you need something else to go there. So that's in one way a disincentive. And then the second thing is that new developments in greater Kansas City are being built with incentives. And incentives for retail is kind of a poor bet.
Why?
because there's only a limited amount of consumer expenditures in the metropolitan region that can go to retail. And so if you build new retail in Kansas City, the question is, are we going to be able to grab retail from Leawood or Overland Park or Liberty? And that's the game each of these municipalities are playing.
Interesting. So it's not just it's suburb versus suburb and Kansas City versus suburb, kind of all at once.
And I think the we need to figure out ways of incorporating retail back into the community. So, for example, my students are working on the landing site right now, and they're going to be presenting first week of May. And almost every one of their projects is looking at ways to incorporate residential combined with retail, and probably downsizing the amount of space for retail and trying to bring in other uses such as office. You can imagine a medical offices, you know, at 63rd and Troost. But that's probably the future. And I think the proposals for Metcalf South, I think almost all of them have a residential component, although I keep hearing senior housing. I feel like that's an easy – we always hear of senior housing.
Why do we always hear that?
I think it's because that's the safe way of doing publicly financed housing. And in fact, what we want is mixed income housing that actually has low income units. And
Gina, I had an interview with Carson Ross, mayor of Blue Springs, and he said that his city saw a lot of its sales tax revenue, people who lived at Blue Springs, shopping in Independence. And they needed to create more retail in Blue Springs in order to get that back. Cities don't encourage retail out of altruistic reasons. They need the revenue. Sales tax has become a larger and larger chunk of how governments function. They have to have it. And so you have this sort of push and pull, this give and take, and each trying to get more of its tax dollars to stay, or the residents' dollars to stay in those particular cities. Now, often in the background and often not discussed about the malls that die is the whole issue of race. Race is everywhere. Race is part of what drives the image of malls. Bannister Mall was the last big mall that was sited in Kansas City. I watched it being built in 1980, and it was part of what had been Benjamin Ranch, and it was it came into being with all of the great hopes and expectations of people who live close to downtown, which I did at the time, and all around it was a regional mall. And the traffic there initially was off the chart, and there were other strip malls that were sited around it because they gained from it too. Highway exits were enlarged. The highway itself was enlarged just because of everyone wanting to go to Bannister Mall. But then Bannister Mall got this reputation of being a place where black people went because it was on a bus line. It was where people found it convenient to shop. And Bannister Mall slowly began to lose the interest of people and shoppers, and it began to die. The same thing had happened to the Landing Mall. It became a place where black people went, and it died. And so race has to be factored into how you get these areas to come back if we want them to come back as retail centers.
Lewis, I'm interested in what you're saying and thinking about another example where arguably one could say that race played a large role in the trajectory of this place, Ward Parkway Mall. But that story has kind of taken a slightly different – it had a similar beginning, but it has taken a kind of different turn. What accounts for that?
Ward Parkway had been one of the big malls in Kansas City, and it had thrived prior to Bannister Mall, and then it went down. And then after Bannister Mall disappeared, Ward Parkway still was on the ropes, partly because of the whole issue of race. But Ward Parkway has successfully reinvented itself, bringing in the Target store and then the Trader Joe's. It did lose first Macy's and then Dillard's, and of course Montgomery Ward was there too. But Ward Parkway has still a large following of people who live in the area who really don't have many other options for shopping, and so it has been able to survive. There have been studies that have been done that have shown that malls that are on bus lines that give access to African Americans and Latinos from urban areas are the ones that are those who that are most at risk. And I think that we have to get to a point where we stop really looking at race as being a death knell for malls.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because the role of community and just people gathering in the story of the mall, that is part of the story. Malls serve functions other than consumer needs. And in fact, it's still not uncommon to see older people, for example, walking laps in the morning hours. There's a level ground. There's the absence of the inconvenience posed by weather or traffic. When these malls die, where do communities relocate to congregate? The teenagers, the people who need to walk in the morning?
The new malls and the new shopping centers that get built, and you know, to the point we discussed earlier, that often get incentivized to do it. And when you incentivize a shopping area to go from one place to another, you know, there's always talk about the economic impact of the new shopping center. But what often doesn't get discussed is, you know, if you incentivize shopping to go from one area to another, that equation often doesn't include the loss of shopping in a previous area that often was incentivized as well. So that's part of the issue with shopping in Kansas City is there's a limited number of people, a limited number of money to spend, but there's always these new projects coming online. And that's why some of the infill type projects have difficulty getting off the ground, you know, such as the old Mission Mall site, which has a lot of reasons why it hasn't gotten off the ground yet. But, you know, you see
what are some of those reasons?
Well, the developers just had a really difficult time getting his act together. And, you know, but when you look at what his plan is, he wants to build a Walmart there and he wants to build a Sprouts there. And those are things that you find all over the Kansas City area. And so there's a public policy question about to what level do you incentivize somebody to build something that's largely duplicative to what's around it. Yeah. The Walmart, for instance, is a mile up the road.
So you bring up an interesting point about the social space of a mall, because the power center doesn't provide that. The
you
power
don't think
centers,
it does.
You know, Zona Rosa had a dress code, just like, I mean, to some degree, not that different from the one that was in the Power and Light District. It's privatized public space, but it's not, there's less control, there's less amenities at Zona Rosa to some degree than there is in an indoor mall. So it's this, you know, we've gone from the downtown where there was the amenities of being downtown to the mall where there were privatized public amenities to, again, Zona Rosa where it's not downtown. It's actually highly controlled. There's a dress code. We're losing public space, and public spaces are very key to produce positive interactions with people who are different.
A lot of the retailers, again, from doing this kind of work, looking at these things for years, they don't want mall walkers. They look at mall walkers as being people who detract from shoppers actually getting into the stores. They take up parking spaces. And so having that public space is important, but it's okay if we give that space to people who want to walk, then what do we get in return? And a lot of times retailers are saying, I'm not getting the return.
This sounds like a natural complication of this concept of privatized public space. Michael Frisch, can you tell us, you've mentioned the phrase power center. How do you define that? What's the definition?
So a power center attracts a particular demographic to big box stores, and it's usually a combination of big box stores to get that demographic.
You mentioned that there isn't a public space there, but the places that I have visited that I think kind of fit this model do usually have some kind of space that is intended, I think, to kind of replicate maybe like a faux town square, like
yeah,
some
so
open
there,
space.
There's a place where you can meet your friends before you go shopping. Oh, we'll meet at the center there or at the fountain.
Well, the other thing about that public space is that if it attracts people, then it creates a sense of safety. And I think that folks are looking for a sense of safety and a sense of being around other folks and wanting to belong.
Steve Vockrout of The Pitch, let's come back to some specific examples before we have to take a break. In the article you wrote in The Pitch, you create sort of this dystopian tour. And I'd like to start with the Great Mall of the Great Plains because it sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was supposed to be. And when it was built, it was built very much in the southern fringe of Olathe, which is, you know, southwest Johnson County. And the whole idea of it was going to be this big attraction and that there would be actual tours of people coming from outside of the Kansas City area in charter buses and in their own cars to come visit it. And it just never really panned out. And over the years, it hasn't really been updated, and it's struggled to keep a lot of the anchor stores. You know, as we talked about earlier, those are crucial to the business model of the mall. And it's, you know, the traffic around there is kind of confusing, and that presents another obstacle about the model of the mall is, you know, if people feel like they have trouble driving there or accessing it, or if they feel like there's a perception of crime, they'll go somewhere else quickly. And that's one thing. I mean, those are two big things that precipitate the decline of the mall.
The Mall of America in Minneapolis, I think, was what the Great Mall of the Great Plains was supposed to be like in our area. And I've been to the Mall of America. It was a fabulous place when it opened. And then, of course, as people's tastes have changed, then it becomes sort of an eyesore, too.
Hey, Steve, before we get out of here, we do need to address the news that brings us all to this studio today, which is talk about the future of Metcalf South. Tell us the Metcalf South story, because that's one of the stops on your tour.
Well, and that's an interesting location, too, because that's right in the heart of Overland Park. It's a highly trafficked intersection along Metcalf. But again, like a lot of the enclosed malls, it just declined over the years. And there are some exceptions to that in the area. Oak Park still does quite well. But Metcalf South didn't, and it's nearby. And a billionaire, Stan Kroenke, bought it along with Lane 4, and they're going to look to repurpose it. Well-heeled developer there, for sure.
Well, Central Standard is going to take a short break, but we'll be right back. And when we return, we'll want to hear from you. What do you want to see happen with Metcalf South Mall? What are your hopes and fears for that space? Call us at 816-235-2888 to let us know. That's 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned.
Burgers.
Yeah, lots of space in this mall.
Baby clothes.
This place has got everything.
Being at Old Orchard Mall kind of reminded me of being home in Africa, by the watering hole, and the animals are in heat.
Jessica, you look great. Are you doing something different, or just hanging out with skankier friends?
That kid is back on the escalator again.
That's criminal. That kid.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Leave it alone.
What?
In a place like this, they can comparison shop.
Everybody could hardly wait until the mall opened.
Said Margie Ortiz.
I go there just about every weekend. So the two of the other girls from work.
See? I told you.
It all boiled down to one inevitable conclusion. I was just totally clueless. Ooh, I wonder if they have that my size.
Let's go to the mall, everybody! Go! Come on, Jessica. Come on, Tori. Let's go to the mall. You won't be sorry. Put on your jelly bracelets and your cool graffiti coat. At the mall, having fun is what it's all about.
I haven't done my homework.
That's okay.
And you know how my parents care.
Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I hope you enjoyed that montage of shopping mall scenes from a handful of popular movies. We couldn't get out of here without bringing a little of the personality of the mall to the studio. We'll post a list of movies we referenced on our website later today, along with the podcast of today's show. And in case it's not abundantly clear by now, we're talking about shopping malls, the height of their popularity, and the reasons for their decline. Share your ideas for Metcalf South, as well as your personal shopping mall memories at 816-235-2888 or join the conversation via Twitter. Our handle is at KCURCST. Here with me in the studio are three knowledgeable guests, and why don't you go around and just reintroduce yourselves to our listeners for us.
Michael Frisch.
I'm Steve Vockrod. I'm a newspaper reporter with The Pitch.
Louis Duguid with the Kansas City Star.
Okay, well, we're already getting some calls, but we left off talking about Metcalf South, and Steve was summarizing to us kind of what the story is there. I'd like to get each of your perspectives on what you'd like to see happen and what you'd be afraid of happening in that particular space.
I think there's a lot of traffic on Metcalf at that location. I'd like to see Overland Park develop some density there, and I'm sure that's it's going to lead to heated discussion if someone comes and says, you know, we want density in Overland Park.
Why is that a heated discussion?
Just there's a tendency to not want, like, I don't know if you saw, if you drove down Somerset maybe a year ago, you saw no skyscraper in Prairie Village. That part of Metcalf actually could handle a skyscraper or, modern apartment building.
Interesting, Steve.
Whatever they do there, I think it would be interesting if they could sort of incorporate some sort of cultural attraction. Just down the road, the county owns the old King Louis building, which they bought, but now the county commission can't come to any kind of agreement with what they're supposed to do with it. And originally, the Johnson County Museum was supposed to move there from Shawnee, where it's in a leaky old building full of mold. And so I think it would be nice if they created some kind of shopping center that it might include perhaps a new home for the Johnson County Museum or something with some cultural significance, as well as maybe some kind of transit stop. You see a lot of transportation, public transportation amenities getting built along Metcalf. That seems like a logical place to boost that up, if you will.
Lewis?
I think it would serve the city best to just push it in and use the vacant land for something else. Office buildings could be built. Residential towers could be built. Mixed-use housing certainly could go there. A park could go there. All of the retail has migrated elsewhere. A lot of the strip malls that used to be going gangbusters, that's gone. Ranch Mart, which is to the east, it's struggling. And so there really isn't the energy for retail in that location anymore.
Well, we have a caller who wasn't able to stay on the line but wants to know why online shopping hasn't been discussed yet. What impact do you guys think that online shopping has on the fate of the mall?
Well, online shopping really serves a purpose for some people who want to get things that are important to them. They know what they want, and they can go online and get it and then have it delivered to their home. But there is still, I think, a need for people to actually go to pick through things, to try things on, to look at refrigerators and various other appliances, and then to have them delivered after they've actually walked around it and kicked the tires, so to speak.
Well, we've got a full switchboard, so let's see what our callers have to say. I'd like to speak with Chris in Olathe. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What do you have to say to us?
Well, having grown up in South Kansas City, basically 99th and Blue Ridge, Bannister Mall was in my backyard, and I remember when it was built and, thus and met its demise there in the 90s. But my question was, having been a Kansas City resident, I was wondering, the question for the city planner is, how come all the malls are on 95th Street? From Bannister Mall to Ward Parkway to Metcalf South to Oak Park, they're all on 95th. Is that by design, or is that just a coincidence?
I think that's a factor of the building of 435, and so you have the inner loop of superhighway construction right about 1968, and a lot of those malls or the plans for those malls those plans were made about 1970, And so they wanted to capture the ability of people to get off an exit of 435 and get to the mall.
They also had available land in those spots. And it became a convenient place for people to go. Ranch Mart or Benjamin Ranch, where folks used to get on horses and ride through that area around Bannister Mall. They sold the land.
I remember those areas quite well.
Yeah, you know, they sold the land for the mall, and it was just a great spot.
Well, 95th Street, which is Bannister when you get across the state line into Missouri, it's one of the few thoroughfares where east-west traffic is pretty manageable. And if you live in Johnson County, you know how difficult it can be to get east-west on some of those other roads.
Let's hear now from Rich in Overland Park. Hi, Rich.
Oh, good morning. I'm a mall walker. I go to the Metcalf South Mall as it, you know, presently, which I might add is they've turned the heat down, so it's kind of cold and kind of dark. But whatever they do with that property, there should be space indoors for older people like me to walk in the winter. Now, I mention that because that's an attraction to living in that neighborhood for older people. Walking is an essential ingredient of health. And I might add that you live on a tight budget if you're over 65, and you can't afford these fancy clubs to have a little walking area. And also, walking in a tight circle like at the Y gets on your nerves very fast. So having a nice open space indoors to walk is very, very helpful. I used to walk at Landing, by the way, when I lived in that area, and that would be a great thing to have at that area. And I will say that it will attract, I mean, older people are not do spend money. They just spend money on different stuff. I also understand that the Sears store at the Metcalf South is privately owned by Sears. I don't know if that's true. Can you corroborate that one way or the other?
Who can answer that question?
I know that for a while, I'm not sure about what the status of it is right at this moment, but I know that that was an obstacle with the redevelopment of Metcalf South for a few years, because whoever owns it has to negotiate with Sears about what they're going to do, and they have to do it relatively in lockstep. So that was a bit of a sticky widget.
This issue of there being kind of a public health need that is being served by these privately owned shopping malls is kind of fascinating. I mean, is there something that we as a society kind of need to grapple with there? Because it sounds like Rich is saying that for people in his community, there's a vital health service that won't be performed anymore once these places are gone.
I think that parks are a great location for people to walk. Unfortunately, you have to put up with changing weather in this area, and a lot of times it can be a challenge. But parks were actually cited as the public space that cities provided and counties and the federal government at the turn of the last century for folks who were moving from the farms and agrarian lifestyles into the city, so that they would have this kind of environment. The malls sort of picked it up by default, because they provided people a safe, climate-controlled spot for walking. I think that urban planners will have to grapple with what to do with people who have the need to walk in the future, and it has to be something that people can do for free.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman, and with me today are Michael Frisch, Steve Vakrat, and Louis Duguid. We're talking about shopping malls, specifically Metcalf South, but also shopping malls in general. We'd love to hear your mall memories, what role the shopping mall had in your own personal story, and also your ideas for the future of Metcalf South. The number to call is 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888, and we'd love to hear from you. We've got a caller on the line now, and we will head on over to Jeff. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. I spent a good deal of time in Metcalf South as a construction worker, renovating storefronts, Dillard's in particular, but I worked in Sears also. And I'm going to piggyback off of what some of the other callers have said. I'm really surprised that some of these malls have not been converted into housing and places for the elderly. In other words, there's plenty of place there for medical facilities, entertainment, and the like. And like you said, you can always walk in the mall. So I'm really surprised that someone hasn't taken that up instead of going out and building a new village somewhere on vacant land.
Well, let's hear from urban planning guru Michael Frisch on this. You were kind of talking about that earlier.
So I guess the studies I've seen in Kansas City is that elderly folks in Kansas City want to stay in their single-family home as long as possible.
Doesn't everyone kind of? Is that not true in other cities?
Well, it's a problem. You know, we have this – so this issue of finding an indoor place to walk, well, we developed, hundreds of square miles of suburbia without good sidewalks. And so actually there isn't necessarily an alternative. And I think providing public space to walk outside is the responsibility of urban planning. I think, you know, our communities provide community centers for health. And, you know, I know that there may be some cost to that, but I don't know how much farther we can go there. I think a senior complex is probably short-sighted. We want to figure out a way to kind of mainstream senior citizens within the fabric of a mixed age development. And I think if we built density, I think empty nesters would be attracted to that. But it has to have the right combination of amenities.
Let's hear now from Kate in Overland Park. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Well, I live around the corner from Metcalf South, and I have to say that I have a small child, and I really wish there was a nice park close by. There just isn't. And there's the playground at John Deamer Elementary, but it's just, you know, it's not a park, and it would be great to see something green there.
So would you be in favor of seeing the structure itself go away in favor of something like that?
Yeah, or combining, you know, a mixed-use structure with something green. I guess I have a lot of pictures in my head of the way it could go, but it seems like something that incorporated a park would be phenomenal. From the standpoint of people that live in the area.
I'd like to get some responses to that from our expert panel.
I like the idea, but the prospect of that happening is pretty slim given that it's privately owned, and the city, I'm sure, wouldn't like to see the potential loss of sales tax revenue go with having something that's publicly owned like a park.
There's a large green space on the northwest corner of Metcalf and 95th Street with the two large office buildings facing the water feature, the lake.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And
with
you can
the
imagine
geese.
Some amenities, walkways and seating areas, so that would be more open to the public. I don't think those amenities exist at that site now, but that's where I would go for a park.
Do we know who owns that land?
Those two buildings, I believe, are owned by it was recently traded, and the company that's going in there is a transportation company. I don't remember right offhand precisely who owns it. I believe it may be the company themselves.
Kate's question reminded me of an article in The Atlantic that was written not too long ago, and the author made sort of a what I think might be a controversial claim, but he wrote, "I don't think we've overbuilt. I think we've under-demolished." What are your thoughts about that?
I think that he's probably right. If you look at some of the places that are abandoned malls now or nearly abandoned, whether it's Indian Springs, Metcalf South, Metro North, those are areas, again, the population has migrated, the retail has migrated to other places, and they need to be leveled so that something else can go in there. We're seeing now with the site that had been Bannister Mall, Benjamin Plaza, that Cerner is looking to develop that land, and that's a benefit for the city.
I wish we would build it in such a way that for permanence, we need to design things so that they could be used in multiple ways. And so this idea of under-demolishing, well, I would say under-deconstructing, maybe we've got to be, for structures that are 50 years old, I'm nervous that we're losing significant 50-year-old buildings right now, 40-year-old buildings. It's at that moment, though, where some of those materials aren't the highest quality. And we need, if we started building with materials for permanence, we wouldn't need to demolish.
Why is it significant and important to hold on to buildings?
Because they represent elements of our culture. They represent part of our lives. And if they're built well, they are a part of our collective memory of place and of experience.
Let's hear from Annette in Overland Park.
Well, good morning. And I first of all want to thank you for taking my call. My question this morning regards the Glenwood Arts Movie Theater. That it moved originally from the Glenwood Manor Hotel when that was deconstructed or torn down many years ago. This particular venue shows art films that are not necessarily seen at other locations. They have an annual film festival. They're locally owned. They have a very large following. And I'm interested in what the plans are for that. We find that to be a very valuable asset to the area, not something that's duplicated with other venues that are very close. They do have another downtown Overland Park place, but it's a smaller venue. There's also one out at Red Bridge. So to go elsewhere to get the kinds of movies that we enjoy seeing would be very difficult. So does anybody know what those plans are?
Plans for the shopping mall, currently housed by the Metcalf South Shopping Center. I think nobody knows.
I don't know the plans, but I will say that watching independent films and foreign films, that's threatened, just like shopping's threatened by the internet. That I can now access films, smaller films, that sort of thing, via web-based film services. And I live in Kansas City, Missouri. I have Google Fiber. I now can access it online.
And it's hard to resist that.
And the problem with that is that it's fun to go to the movies, and you can make it a social event, and I'm not doing that anymore.
It's part of the change that is our culture. We have gone from being a people that gather in a place to watch a movie to having privatized space in our homes where we can get that same experience of taking in a movie but without the audience. And shopping malls and movie theaters have gone through this metamorphosis all along. One thing that we haven't touched on is the blue laws that had existed in Missouri. The blue laws prevented people from buying things on Sundays because we were supposed to be at home with our families and church and all that. So in order to buy things that you needed or wanted, you had to go to Kansas. And the Indian Springs Mall and Metcalf South, all of those places in Kansas benefited from the blue laws in Missouri because we had to travel across state line to get things. When the blue laws were lifted in Missouri, then it really started a signal of a downward spiral of the malls in Kansas.
It does seem like some of the malls and shopping centers that focus a lot of energy on their movie theaters, though, that those movie theaters are kind of filling in that space and thriving in some cases, or is that not the case?
They had, if you remember, Bannister Mall had two sets of movie theaters. There was one in the mall, and then there was one across Bannister just to the south. And both of those places closed prior to the mall actually going away. It's just that, again, trends and people's tastes change.
Let's hear. Oh.
Well, I was just going to say that the AMC that is in Ward Parkway, they reinvested in that, and that sort of helped. That was one of the pieces that helped spruce back up that mall that was very much in decline.
Let's hear now from Pat in Liberty. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you today?
Pretty good. How about you?
Very good. I really miss the malls that we had in.
I'm sorry, Pat, that you had in what?
Malls and touching and feeling the product and knowing the quality of it. When you order online, you do not know. It is a hassle. So I really miss those. I miss the community of going out and seeing friends and things at the malls that we used to do. And at the same time, I know we're evolving as a nation, and we're getting away from things the way they were, but we still need to support those companies that take the time to put those clothes out so we can see, touch, feel, try them on, etc.
Yeah, I'm going to let our panel respond to that because we're running out of time. And
I think that she's right. We have a shared memory about the malls, not just from having gone there, but in the consumer products that we have in our homes. Everything from tools to appliances to clothing. And that's a piece that is going to slowly be threatened as baby boomers who used to just buy a lot of stuff. Well, we're older, we don't buy things as much, and that's going to threaten even the retail that we have.
Well, and, you know, it sounds like a little bit that the downtown coming back, is that part of this picture? Can downtown perform that function?
I think that younger people are moving downtown. That's going to help.
I think you're going to see flagship stores instead of many retail outlets all over the metro. One big flagship store in the future where you go and feel it.
Alas, our time is up. I'd like to thank Michael Frisch, Louis Duguid, and Steve Vakrat for being here today to talk about shopping malls in our cityscape. Thanks so much for your time, guys.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
If you want to weigh in during tomorrow's community meeting about the future of Metcalf South, that will take place at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening at the Matt Ross Community Center in Overland Park. A second meeting will be held in the same location at 7 p.m. next Tuesday. We'll post that information along with the podcast of today's show on our website. Look for those details at kcur.org/centralstandard this afternoon. Tune in tomorrow for a candid conversation about drinking and driving in Kansas City. Does our city have a particular culture around this behavior? Why do people make unsafe decisions at the end of a night out, even when they have all the information and statistics they need to dissuade them? Add your 2 cents to that discussion tomorrow at 10. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with help from Christy Garten, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Kate Baxendale. Linda Scher is our announcer. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for Up to Date with Steve Kraske coming up next.